up next on Art Focus, Amanda Clem interviews Portland artist Sarah Wurzberger.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of That's No Lady, That's Darcelle, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs from September 19th through October 5th at Portland State University's Lincoln Performance Hall in Portland. Walter Cole owned the first Portland coffee bar, then bought an old beer and wine tavern. He began a drag act that, in 1974, became Darcelle 15. This musical tells the life story of Walter, Darcelle, and more. Again, that's Triangle Productions, That's No Lady, That's Darcelle, from September 19th through October 5th at Portland State University's Lincoln Performance Hall, located at 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Clinton Street Theater, open since 1915, featuring independent films, parties, and community events. Located at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Full event schedule, tickets, showtimes, and more information is available online at cstpdx.com.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Have him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
You're listening to Art Focus, and I'm your host, Amanda Clem. Today we'll be talking with Sarah Wurzberger, a local artist and designer with a multidisciplinary studio practice working primarily across mediums of weaving, ceramics, and painting. Her weaving practice spans hand, industrial, and digital weaving, and it's the subject of our conversation today because Sarah has an exhibition opening at Holding Contemporary in the Pearl District for First Thursday this week, so if you're listening live, just in a couple of days. So welcome, Sarah. Thanks for being on the show with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about your exhibition just right off the bat at Holding Contemporary.
So the exhibition's called Color Vision. Mm-hmm. My work uses a lot of color, so part of the reason. These are smaller textile pieces that are made on the digital loom and also on the hand loom.
Okay. So textile work, for somebody who doesn't know anything about it, what a loom is and just like the basic mechanics of it and what the difference would be between the digital and the hand mechanical
one. So for people who don't know anything about it, weaving is two sets of strings. One set is under tension and the other set is woven into the tension strings. So you need a frame in order to create the tension. So what the frame is a loom. And so there's all different types of looms out there. Mm-hmm. And that's where like a floor loom comes in, or a digital loom, or an industrial loom, which I've used all of those in my work.
Wow.
So what the work comes out to be in the end is kind of depends on what kind of loom I'm using. And so I would say with digital weaving, it's more of a back and forth between drawing and painting, and then maybe scanning it in, and then working in the computer, and then back again onto the loom where you're actually physically weaving it. So it's sort of a collaboration in a way with the computer.
Right.
And same with jacquard weaving. And then hand weaving is more manipulated by like your feet or your hands.
Mm-hmm. So when you're making a pattern for a piece that you're doing, you're usually starting with a hand sketch, and then how do you build a pattern for something like that?
Again, kind of depending on the loom. If I were making a hand weaving or on a floor loom that I have at my house, part of the work that I do is not very planned, so I don't sketch out too much. With weaving, you normally do. You kind of have to have an idea because it's such a long process of making the warp, which is the long strings under tension, and then actually weaving. It's so slow. But for me, part of the excitement is not making the plan. And so you'll see in my work is, you know, color changes or shifts in pattern that happen spontaneously as I'm making it, as I'm responding to the color combinations or the patterns that are happening.
Okay.
And then if you're making a digital weaving, then it's a little bit different, because for me, I would probably, what I do is draw or paint some patterns, and then I'll scan that into the computer, into Photoshop. And then in Photoshop, I might make some digital patterns in there, something that looks skewed or that looks kind of digital. Mm-hmm. And then from that, the best way to describe how you make a weaving from that is that it's sort of like paint by number. You literally say, I need that weave structure to go in this color area, and I need that weave structure to go in this color area, and then it ends up coming out as a weaving. And I shouldn't say coming out, because I think that digital sometimes implies fast, uh-huh. It implies easy, and the digital loom is a loom that you have to weave it yourself, so you're literally weaving line by line. It's not like, or it just kind of comes to mind that you're like, oh, it might be like a printer, like right. a 3D printer where mm-hmm. it just prints it out.
A robot.
Yeah. So it's just aided. It's computer aided. The computer tells the loom what strings to lift in order to make the pattern, mm-hmm. but the weaver is actually throwing what's called the shuttle, which has the yarn on it. So you're tossing it back and forth and line by line, you're building the weaving up. And so there is a chance for spontaneity in that process, in the sense that you could like change the color if you wanted mm-hmm. or change the yarn. And that's where it kind of becomes a collaboration between the machine and the maker.
That's cool. Yeah. That's a really interesting process. And I especially love that collaborative feel kind of comes across in your work, the geometry of it, and the what I'm going to call warp, which I think is an accidental weaving joke.
Oh, yeah. Love weaving puns.
So can you tell us a little bit about your inspiration behind that? Or does it come from a technological background, or is it just a purely pattern-driven aesthetic choice?
So I would say, gosh, I have a lot of inspirations, both like weaving, I mean, other weavers, painters, like contemporary painters, surrealists, outside artists, all kinds of like craft from all over the world. Mm-hmm. I feel like I just almost everywhere. Yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense, especially in thinking the color choices for your work, too. They're very vibrant.
Yeah. I think a lot of my work is very, I'm very drawn to combining patterns and color. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think I'm drawn to colors that make me feel joyful, or combinations that make me feel excited, or like some sort of delight. Like, I've done something that looks like it's not a weaving, or something that like tricks people, I guess,
yeah.
in a way.
But definitely, especially seeing a thumbnail on the computer, they kind of do look like digital images at first,
yeah.
digitally made images,
yeah.
and digitally existing only images. Mm-hmm. And to see that in real life, in a textile form too, adds such a different dimension to the work. So these are smaller pieces.
These are smaller pieces. I did have some larger pieces in the New York show mm-hmm. that was just up, and those are made on, the larger pieces were made on an industrial loom.
Okay.
So that's even another step, because you're making on a loom that's the size of a room, a large room,
yeah.
and you have to have a technician, and it's something that they use in the weaving industry, but I was using it, the industrial, like, fabric industry.
Yeah.
And so I was using it during grad school at RISD. They have one of these industrial looms.
That was definitely one of my questions.
Yeah.
How do you have access to a giant room-sized machine like this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of what makes weaving a sort of not that accessible medium for some people, is because it's either like cloistered in mills, which are so like just based on producing product,
yeah.
or they're very expensive and they're out of school or something like that. So that's kind of why I vary my mediums, or the way that I make work, because I don't always have access to a digital loom because
right.
I don't own one.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
How do you decide which machine or which method to use when you're making a piece? Or do you do them in series? Like, are you working with your table loom for several pieces, or is it kind of per?
Yeah. So, First part of the question, I guess I use what loom is available to me. So if the digital loom is available somewhere, or if I did a residency, then I would definitely hop on that because that's very fun. Mm-hmm. But also, like, if I were making like a blanket, or I would want to do it on my floor loom at home, mm-hmm. because that's going to produce a blanket quality where a digital loom you could, but it's just kind of a different tool. And then the second thing is I definitely produce in a series, because with weaving, like I kind of mentioned it before, there's two sets of yarns, and the vertical set, or the set under tension, takes quite a long time to put on a loom. Yeah. It's like, depending on how many, depending on how many strings you have and how dense the weaving is, it could take, you know, a week. Wow. Or something.
Just to set up,
yeah. And that depends on what if you're dying beforehand or something like that. I mean, it can just get ridiculously long in the process. So when you are setting up a weaving, you will want to consider how much yardage you're putting onto the loom. So I end up putting like quite a bit, 16 yards or something, if I'm making blankets. Yeah. So that way that would be like 6 blankets at a time. Okay. Or I think the last project I did was maybe like 8 yards or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then so each piece it'll kind of tie together because it'll all have that particular warp on it with the certain stripes. Yeah.
Interesting.
And let's talk about a couple of these pieces that are going to be in the exhibition, and we'll just try to describe them verbally. Some of these pieces have what look like different layers on them.
This has printing on it, so it's like this is made on a hand loom at home, so this is the warp, the vertical ones. The weft is this red, mm-hmm. and then there is actually a print on top of it all, which is the black shape.
Okay, can you explain the print to us? Like ink print?
No. Yes. So this is what's called a sublimation print. It's called dye sublimation. So you use polyester is the weft that I used, mm-hmm. and polyester accepts dispersed dye. And so when you place, so what I did is I painted dispersed dye onto a piece of paper, and then I cut it a shape out of the piece of paper, and then you place it under a heat press onto the polyester, and then it transfers.
Oh my gosh.
There's no water involved in the process, and it's actually like dyed into the material rather than sitting on top like paint or
something.
Yeah. And that way you can kind of see, like it looks like you can see through it, or it's transparent.
It does. So that was done after the weaving was completed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It does. It kind of looks like it went through a printer and it ran out of ink at a certain point.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm changing the weave structure so that this red is all on the face of the weave, and then it's slowly being transferred to the back of the weaving. Mm-hmm. And then, so if you flipped this over, which weaving is all about the front and the back,
right.
If you flipped it over, this bottom part would be all red, and it would kind of, you would see more of the warp up at the top
at part. The top part. Yeah. The dye over that shade a different dimension to that, too, that is.
Because it only picks up, because I used cotton in the warp, and so sublimation printing or dye transfer doesn't work on cotton, so it only is picking up on the pink.
Right. And the shapes that you create are really fluid in a way, kind of, they look sculptural, they're a flat piece.
Yeah.
And I love that about it.
So these ones don't have... I should show you one more too, because these are the hand loom ones, so they don't have the imagery. Like the hand loom or the digital loom can create these more like detailed images, and the hand loom can only kind of, it's more limited to like straight lines, and that's one as well in the hand loom.
Yeah. Do you stitch over these, or are these just...
That's a mistake, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's nice. I mean, if you make a mistake in weaving, the only way to get it out, you know, is by unweaving it, where, you know, like in drawing or painting, you're erasing it, painting over or whatever. So, like, whenever I make a mistake, I normally just leave it in, just because I'm not a perfectionist.
So when you want to create something that's got intricate shapes, you would use a digital...
Exactly, loom. Yeah. And that's why I was kind of wanted, like this one I printed onto, again, these are sublimation, which is, you can print, actually like a digital printer will print out images, and then, or like this was a sketch that was scanned in, and then you can heat transfer it onto the polyester, like this one. So I wanted to make imagery sort of like that, but I didn't have that loom, so I decided to print on top of it.
So you're using the tools you have available to you.
And yeah.
This is so cool. So what else is going to be in the show?
So I have a few digital weaving pieces. They have geometry, color, and pattern kind of interacting together to create these, not like a landscape, it's kind of like a mindscape.
I was
gonna like
say, it does look like a landscape to me. There's the horizon line, maybe that's why.
Yeah.
In a very surrealist manner, though.
Right.
And the little shape on top, which is it's smaller like, and tighter knit grid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like red and green. It's like kind of like a half an apple.
Half an apple on a green background with the green and teal maze.
Yeah.
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 It goes all the way into the center of the image. How big is this piece?
That one's 14 by 17 round inches. So those ones, the digital weavings are limited to how big the loom is, or any weaving is limited to how big the loom is. So this, I think, is 27 inches all the way across. So that's what I did. And then I can make them smaller if I need to by cutting it up.
So this is a method that is more intuitive for you. Is that piece in particular one that was it very planned out, or was it kind of
inspired? The digital weavings you have to plan out a bit more because you have to get the image. The whole image has to be there before you start weaving.
Right.
And these ones, in the way that it's not planned in the sense that I didn't make any color choices before I started weaving. So I picked some colors and then started going. And then as I went, I was like, oh, I think I'm going to change that. And so that ends up, like, this black line is definitely a place where that I was like, I'm going to try this and see what happens. And then that all becomes part of the final piece rather than being a test for a final piece. So, like, each piece is kind of a try or a test in of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what is exciting to me is, like, I never know exactly how it's going to turn out.
That's so cool. How long did that piece take you to make altogether?
So the digital weavings require some, like for me, there's some upfront process, which is like drawing, scanning in, then working in the computer, and then placing weave files into the drawing, and then you go to the loom, and then you're weaving. So probably upfront time before weaving is probably like 15 to 20 hours, and then actually weaving this piece would probably be like 5 hours.
Okay.
So not too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was sitting next to the other one on the loom. That's why they both have like the black line. And
oh, I see. And then that's kind of how a series might happen.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah. They kind of share some of the same yarn and
different imagery. Oh, that's an exciting thing to learn. Now, going to the exhibition and being able to keep an eye out for the similarities in pieces and trying to figure out which ones were loom siblings.
Exactly.
Well, this is so cool. So yeah, you've definitely got shapes, illusions of shapes, and I guess they're both vessels.
Yes, yeah.
Is there symbolism there?
I like to use symbol sort of generally, like vessel. I guess, you know, I kind of think I like the tarot a lot, and so things like that where you're thinking about vessels or just general symbols that we've, you know, use in our culture all the time. But for me, it's not specific. It kind of harkens to, like, Greek vessels, and then there's a wine glass there.
That's a recognizable one.
Yeah. So that is also a digital weaving. I made a bunch of paintbrush strokes and then scanned them in. And so that's what you're seeing in the inside of the rectangle.
So the inside of the rectangle. It does definitely look like brush strokes once, now that you mentioned that. But is this not the sublimated dye?
No, that's just all weaving.
Okay, so the visual similarities there is confusing too. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, once you get up close to it, you can see the different threads.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting, having this the evidence of a artist touch,
right,
woven in to the, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I like to kind of surprise maybe the viewer or myself when I'm doing something. If you're like, oh, I'm gonna try to make it look like this one way, or that you wouldn't expect that's what a weaving looks like,
You surprise the viewer, and then the surprise of the backside of the piece too is an interesting thing. So conceptually, when you're thinking of a piece, you do think about both views.
I guess I have a couple different hats that I wear because, like, if I'm thinking, because I come from design and art background, if I'm thinking as a designer and I'm thinking of an object, like making a blanket, which I've done, I'm definitely thinking about both sides, mm-hmm. And how is it going to function. But if I haven't made any art pieces specifically yet that involve the backside, okay. Which is, it is something to think about with weaving for sure. I think maybe, yeah, I'd be interested in doing something that had like, was almost a screen or something like that in the future where you could walk around it in space. But so far the art pieces are mounted, and then the backside is only for later on when someone discovers it or something.
Mostly not meant to be seen.
Yeah.
How did you get into weaving?
So I had a babysitter when I was really young who went to Kansas University, which was a pretty good weaving school, but she taught me, she set up a little table loom for me as a kid and set up all the warp, which is kind of that laborious process. She had that all set up for me, so I would just come in and weave on it, and that was really fun. And then later in college, I went to the Maryland Institute College of Art for a painting degree, and I took a weaving class there, and I was like, oh my gosh, what, this is amazing, but I didn't know really how to apply it to my life or the world. I was just like, oh, this is, I really like it. I knew that. So, and then I put that down for a long time and then went out into the world. And then 10 years after undergrad, I went back to school to get my MFA in textiles. And ever since then, I've kind of been curious in teaching myself at whatever I can about all different types of weaving.
Yeah. That's so cool. So and you mentioned before you're doing, have you done an artist residency?
Done a couple, yeah. I did one at Haystack, which is a craft residency in Maine, and they had something called the Open Studio Residency, and you can just go there. It's kind of like a grown-up playground or something. You're like, can run from one studio to the next, and it doesn't even matter if it's like a different medium. They even encourage you to like go to different studios and learn.
Yeah.
So I did that, but I was kind of down in the textile studio the whole time. What else? I did something with the Weaving Mill in Chicago. They're some friends of mine from RISD, and two women started it. Now only one of them is still running it. Her name's Emily Winter, and you should check out the Weaving Mill if you haven't. It's really cool. It's basically an artist-run mill in Chicago, and so we did a collaboration where I would go out there and work on designing little samples, and we decided to make blankets from it. And we kind of had this like back and forth process of designing the blankets on the industrial loom, and then we made a small run of 20 blankets.
Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds really neat.
Yeah.
So as far as textile arts go, there are many, but mm-hmm. you pretty much stick with weaving.
Yeah, I do. I feel like there's so much to learn within weaving. and it's still holding my curiosity, so I'm working with that. Knitting, that's a whole other thing that I just never was able to quite latch onto.
Yeah. Definitely interesting.
And felting. There's some felters out there.
There's so many different types in, like, the crossover between the two and the crossover between the digital. I guess I'm most interested in your crossover between the digital and the organic structure of your work.
I really like to cross the two in my work so that maybe the handwovens look digital or they look... I think, well, in the digital weavings, some of what I was interested in, it was almost like a meta weaving because I was like, what if I try to make a plaid, which is a basic handwoven design, and what if I put that into the digital weaving and I skew it in the digital realm and then weave it? So it's kind of that back and forth of like both of those, like the processes informing one another and kind of inspiring one another.
Yeah, they go hand in hand in our daily lives these days.
Yeah.
In addition to textiles, though, you work with other mediums. Love to know more about your design work and about your ceramics, too.
Yeah, sure. So the ceramics is kind of a thing that I do. It's like my pleasure thing almost on the side. I love weaving, but when I can, I make ceramics. And I had been making about 2 years ago a lot of cups, and I was using it as a form to just kind of practice and perfect. But I haven't been doing ceramics recently, but I'm hoping to get back into it and try to do a little more sculptural work because I think that getting, or just for me, doing other mediums is a way to kind of take a break and re-enliven your inspiration. And so I'd like to go back to that soon, but I haven't yet. And then the design work, I've been making blankets, and it's kind of a crossover with the artwork in a way because they're like functional art almost. So they're sort of, I would say that crosses over into design, you know, it's these kind of functional objects, but that takes a really long time and a lot of effort to make it.
They both are very laborious processes, aren't they?
And when I worked with the mill in Chicago, that was great too because, in a sense, I got to design it by hand, but then there's 20 blankets, you know, and it's, so it's not, you're not hand weaving it and like... going through that process with your body trying to make all of it, but
so your exhibition at Holding Contemporary is all textiles because it is Portland Textile Month, and listeners can find out more information about Portland Textile Month at portlandtextilemonth.com. There's a schedule of events including a yet to be scheduled artist talk with Sarah, so that's something to stay tuned for. And so, yeah, this is a full week for you, full month. Mm-hmm. Are you participating in any other Portland Textile Month activities? Are you excited about anything in particular?
Oh, man, yes. There are so many good things happening. I am definitely going to go to the Multnomah Art Center for the Open Weaving Studio because I actually have never been there, and I need to go there as a weaver.
Yeah, it's a treasure.
Great.
Okay, well, Sarah, thank you so much for being on the show with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So you can catch Color Vision at Holding Contemporary this month, this October, and stay tuned for Sarah's Artist Talk mid-October.
Yep.
And you can follow Sarah on Instagram at Sarah Wurzberger. That's S-A-R-A-H-W-E-R-T. T-Z-B-E-R-G-E-R. This has been Art Focus with Amanda Clem talking with Sarah Wurzberger about her exhibition Color Vision, opening first Thursday, October 3rd at Holding Contemporary.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Behind the Bullet film screening on Friday, October 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center in Portland. The documentary film Behind the Bullet deepens awareness of untold stories from the U.S. gunfire epidemic. Director Heidi Heumann will be in attendance and answer questions after the film. There will then be a soul box procession into Multnomah Village. Again, that's Behind the Bullet film screening on Friday, October 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center, 7688 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a talk by Alex Vitale on Saturday, October 12th at the Dismantle Change Build Center in Portland. Alex Vitale, director of the Brooklyn College Policing and Social Justice Project, is the author of The End of Policing. He'll be speaking on how to reconstruct police culture and behavior and describe alternatives that remove the police from dealing with drug addiction, houselessness, sex work, mental health crises, and more. Again, that's Alex Vitale on Saturday, October 12th, 6 p.m. at the Dismantle Change Build Center, 14 Northeast Killingsworth in Portland. More information can be found